Jeff Ogilvie survives Wingfoot.
Now the moment Aaron Bradley has waited for.
Gary Webb is the five-time Australian Open champion.
Golf at its best by one of the best in golf, Peter Thompson.
Standing in front of a crowd like this today and win the PGA Championship is pretty special.
He's done it at last. Greg Norman.
His name on the Stonehaven Cup.
Leishman to 11 under. Now we've got a new leader, kids.
Here it is, Adam Scott. A life changer. Coming up next, you have unrestricted access to golf across Australia and the world. Thanks to Golf Australia, we're going inside the ropes. Subscribe now on iTunes or your favourite podcast app, or head to golf.org.au.
Hello and welcome to Inside the Ropes, episode number 68. Another Andy Maher free zone. I'm Mark Hayes, joined by a host of golfing luminaries. And you too, Martin Blake.
Hello, Hazy. I must admit, you're knocking me on the head there. I am a bit bleary-eyed because I went to the cup yesterday. So, and I'm a bit lighter in the pocket as well.
No good? Couldn't find a
winner? No, couldn't do a thing. No, I tried hard.
Yeah. Oh, that's what really matters.
Yeah.
Except to your bank manager, of course.
Yeah.
We're also joined by the king of the podcast, Mike Clayton.
Hazy.
Hello, Clayton.
How's it? I was playing golf yesterday afternoon. Beautiful, perfect day for golf it was yesterday.
No one
on the golf course.
At Royal Queensland?
No, Metro.
Metro. When were you at Royal Queensland?
Monday.
We saw you up there.
Royal Queensland on Monday, yep.
And you played up there?
No, Trevor and I spoke to the Queensland Superintendents Association, talking about golf course setup for tournaments and golf course architecture and just golf stuff generally. It was a good day.
And Metro's never really got a hair out of place. But
well, it was a terrible morning. I mean, there was an inch and a half of rain. I played with two Canadian guys. One, Ray Stewart, who beat Freddie Couples in the Dunhill Cup in 1994 for Canada to win.
Wow.
So he's first time he'd ever been to Australia. And he couldn't believe it. He said, it's pouring. And the course was perfect. We teed off at 2 o'clock and it was perfect. He couldn't believe it. So this is the best condition course I've ever seen. It's had an inch and a half of rain on it. Morning.
He couldn't believe the drainage or just
he couldn't
the way
believe
it was
how great it was. Because Adam Hadwin and Nick Taylor, who are playing for Canada, both come from his club.
All right.
So he knows him well. So
he's a nice guy, Adam Hadwin.
Yeah, they're good. Canadians are good. We like Canadians.
Oh, I'm married to one. They're all right. They're
very good. They're very good Canadians.
Got to say that. I've always got to say something
He's
nice.
He's got
about
the maple leaf under his shirt.
No, we like Canadians. Not. Canadians and Swedes are Northern Hemisphere Australians, aren't they?
That's true. Really? That's true. Speaking of, no, I can't really make a good segue there, but last week there was such incredible reaction to having Zach Murray all the way from Brisbane on the show that we decided we'd recruit him and get him into the studio. Very good feedback from you for your debut last week, mate. Congratulations and welcome to Inside the Ropes studio.
No, thanks for having me. I think I mentioned last week it was a dream to be on the podcast, but it's...
Clayton's laughed when you said that.
Dream to be on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's something I've been hitting Hazy up for a while. So it's fantastic to be right here amongst it with some golfing legends and Hazy.
Oh, it's cheap shots. This will get him far. Look, it hasn't been a spectacular week. We often start off with how good has this been around Australian, the world of golf. It hasn't been that way for us this week so much. Some great stuff, Blakey, from Jordan Zunich at the Isuzu Queensland Open, who overtook my mate here on my left. Zach Murray led for an incredible two rounds of the Queensland Open following the wire-to-wire victory.
Six in a row.
At Mount Lawley. So six rounds in a row on the Australian PGA Tour, Zach Murray led until he got gobbled up on the weekend.
Yeah, Jordan Zunich had to make a 3.5-metre putt on the last hole to win it, having led by six at one stage. Did he lead by six?
That'd be a 10-footer, wouldn't it?
Yeah, a 10-foot putt. Good. Okay, Clayton.
Let's call them what they really are.
Yeah. And his grandmother had died a couple of weeks before. So the week before the tournament, he'd been to the funeral. So his grandmother, Anna. So he actually said afterwards that, you know, when he stood over the putt, he was, you know, this one's for her kind of thing. So it was quite emotional and, you know, a very good player, Jordan. Zach, did you sort of suffer from a bit of fatigue in the end of that? You know, because it's obviously very hard to keep leading. You know, you got through the week in WA, but you know, that must be pretty tough to just have the target on your back all the time.
Yeah, I physically I was fine. Like, I'd physically I felt fine, but I just made a couple of silly errors, and naturally sort of fatigue set in, and I just got a little bit frustrated and just found it hard to sort of just settle. I was pretty calm and relaxed on the first day, and it sort of, the form continued on, and it was all happy days, and I sort of battled my way around in the second round, and then I actually played with Jordan in the third round, and he sort of just put on a bit of a clinic and just roared straight past me like winks. So
Who weighs less out of you two?
Who weighs less?
Yeah.
You'd probably have to wring us wet like a face washer to find out, but probably me. He's got a bit of beef on him. I'm just something out of the woods.
Pull through for a rifle?
Yeah.
Which begs us the question, mate, not the rifle aspect of it, but, you know, it is still the elephant in the room. I know that Clayton is desperate to ask you about your amateur status or professional status for the upcoming Australian Open. Not going to play the New South Wales Open this week, just to have a breather, but you are going to play the Australian Open. Will it be as an amateur or as a pro, or haven't you made the big decision?
I'm thinking I'll probably just flip a coin on the day. I'm sort of getting closer to making a decision. It's something that I want to sort of take my time and work out what my options are. And
I haven't got that much time yet between now and the Australian Open.
That's right. I'll process it quickly. I'll keep ticking away. And I think I said it last week, I just sort of want to have all my ducks in a row, and then that way I don't have to worry about anything on the course. So, it'll be good either way.
So when you make that decision, in all seriousness, is it just around where can I play once I turn professional? Is that the key element?
Yeah, it is. It's basically, just trying to make up a schedule, because at the end of the day, like, if I do turn professional, it is my job, and I don't really want to be... I'd love to sit at home with my girlfriend for 10 weeks in a row just kicking back, but unfortunately that's just not going to pay the bills. So, I'll continue to do a little bit of work at Kingston Heath, which would be great, but I sort of want to have a fair few events to play, and... it's just something I've got to sort of tick off.
Fair enough. Well, we won't hassle you anymore. It's been 2 weeks of constant grilling. So we do want to congratulate you on the West Australian Open, though. It's always fantastic to have another new name on the trophy of around Australian golf.
Given you're exempt on the tour, can you play the Australian PGA as an amateur?
No, I've got to take up. I've got to take up the invites as a pro.
Pro to play the Australian
PGA, yeah.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Well, there's been another couple of young Aussies make a bit of a headway in their career this week. Still a bit more of it to go. But Dean Lawson was the medalist at one of the Spanish
killed
venues.
Him, didn't
he? Yeah, absolutely fantastic. From the mighty Kirlewis Golf Club. Yeah. Cards on the table. The Ballerines jewel, the Kirlewis Golf Club.
Third hole, he's learned golf strategy playing the third hole at Kirlewis.
He may well have. Dean Lawson. A rising pro in the Australian Tour ranks, and he alongside Nick Cullen, a very popular Atlanta-based Adelaide golfer, and also Ben Eccles, who, not unlike Zach, won an Australian or New South Wales Open as an amateur a couple of years ago, all advanced through the second stage of Q School in Europe this week, and they've set themselves up for one final shot coming up. Unfortunately, that means November 10 to 15 finale, the sixth round. I can't believe the depth of these tournaments, but six-round finale means that they'll miss the Australian Open, but much bigger fish to fry here. That's a great achievement, Clayton, to get through that final stage of Q School.
Yeah, it's not. Tour schools are hard. I mean, the hardest, when I turn pro, we could just go to Europe and play.
Yeah.
Just turn up on Monday and play. Now you've got to go to two or three stages at tour school, and even then you only get to play for 40 or 50% of the money in Europe. So it's once you get there, it's hard to keep it. You've got to play really well to keep your card. I was talking to Pete Leonard about how Leonard got on the tour. As a club pro, he got on the tour by coming out in the Australian Tour, making the cut, getting the next week, making the cut next week, and he made his money that way. But it's much trickier to get to where you want to go now.
If you're on the LPGA, you've got to play eight rounds of schools. So.
Oh, isn't that unbelievable?
Yeah.
Talk us through that one.
So Robin Choi from the Gold Coast has got through this. You had to finish in the top 45 to get a card to play on the LPGA next year, but it's eight rounds at Pinehurst, which Zach's shaking his head at. But this is unbelievable. Robin went out there and had 79-79 in her first two rounds, and she's ended up making it on the cut line. She finished 10 over. So she went 79, 79, 67, then a 76, so she's miles off the pace. Then in her second last and third last round, 69 and 68, closes with 74, makes it on the cut line. So she's 20 years of age. She's still an amateur, so I presume she's going to turn pro soon and take up her card to play on the main women's tour next year.
University of Colorado for the last couple of years. She's done really well.
Yeah, it's a great effort. She's been around for a long time. You know, she's won the Queensland Amateur in 2015-16, so she came through all the programs, went over to college, and she's done really well there.
She made it on the mark, but she was also by one player.
Yeah.
So one player had birdied the last hole.
Yeah.
The 10 overs were out. So she made it not only by one shot, but by one player as well. They were tied for 45th. So one player out of, I think there were two or three out there playing still. But they were on the front nine, so they were finishing on a par three, not the par five at the 18th. So
and it was made it
a little more comfortable, but there had been some sweating going on there.
Yeah, not wrong, especially after eight rounds. And there was another drama in the LPGA Q School too, I believe.
Yeah, well, there was Clates knows a little bit more about it than me, but there was a player who hit a ball out of bounds, and it's understood that her mother kicked the ball back into play, and she didn't know this at the time, so she played the ball.
Well, she was told that. That was what would happen.
But the ball moved.
And she played it anyway. Mm. The caddy said, you better get a ruling here. And she said, I'm going to play it. So you can probably be a fair bet that it wasn't the first time that had happened.
The old foot wedge, eh?
The old mum kicking the ball back into play.
Have you guys heard that from Korea before? That some of
Is that be racist about it?
No. It's nothing to do with.
On the LPGA too, I've heard.
Not the LPGA. On the men's side of things. Oh. They play on the narrow courses. A lot of our guys go up there and say, "Oh, there's shields go up on the side of the fairways in Korea for the local players."
I think it's a little bit I've heard a little bit out of China. There might be
shields.
Oh yeah, a bit of dodgy action going on. Yeah,
Have you heard that, Clades?
Well, there are always stories about Korea with the spectators kicking Australia. You know, blokes who drive down the middle of the fairway and over the hill and get down and the ball will be up against a tree.
I've heard that.
I never saw that stuff. So it's always easier to kick around accusations, but unless you see it yourself, it's...
Yeah.
In this instance, it was seen by a neighbour, someone who lived on a house seen by the course.
But I think that, there's been some stuff on the LPGA that's not entirely kosher.
A tad untoward.
Yeah, I think. and as John Huggan, Huggy will be here next week at the Australian Open, but he calls it golf's dirty little secret. You know, he did an anonymous player survey in Europe a few years ago. Some interesting questions. One of them was, who's the smartest player on tour? And he asked Eduardo Molinari, Francesco's brother. And he said, Eduardo kind of looked at me for a second and said, they all said me, right? And he said, yep. the other one was, have you ever seen a player cheat on tour? And I think out of 40 responses, there were 38 who said, yep.
But then was the next question, have you ever cheated? And the answer was 100% no.
No. Well, no, that wasn't the next. I don't think that was the next question. In fact, the other question was he asked Nicholas Kolsarts whether there was any recreational drug use on tour. And Nico looked at him and said, not anymore. he'll be hopefully at the Australian Open next week, Kolsarts.
Well, and this show is, we have to promote this a couple of times. We're going to have... a new look to the Australian Open radio coverage this year, because it's not going to be Australian Open radio, as we mentioned last week, unfortunately, but we are going to have Inside the Ropes podcast. Definitely a preview either on the Monday or the Tuesday from the Lakes. And then we're going to have every day after play, we're going to drag someone like a Zach Murray in and we'll grill them about their round Thursday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday. And we'll just chew the fat about what happens at the Lakes. So it's going to be a different look for Inside the Ropes. That's one to look forward to.
We should have one on Friday. We'll get one bloke who three putts the last and missed the cut by a shot, and then he can come in and scream at me about the golf course.
You reckon that's 100 to 1 on?
That'd be money, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no.
Yeah. So no Matt Cutler radio anymore.
No, it's a very good point. No.
We'll have to get him on the podcast because the demand will be strong.
It'll be very strong.
There's a Twitter handle about it.
There is.
Matt Cutler fan club.
Yeah. I don't follow it personally, no.
You don't?
No.
The rumour was that you might have actually had the keys to starting it up.
So are we getting Australian Open Radio back next year?
The plan is to breathe life back into it.
Good.
So we just need to make, we need to make it viable. So it's been axed for no other reason than finances. So Yeah, it's hopefully going to come back bigger and better when we return to the Australian in 2019 and then come back to Melbourne the following year. So there's a fair bit going on that front. Blakey, just while we're on the LPGA side of things, Minji Lee, we haven't really had the chance really to question anything she's done this year, but she finally blew a sand.
She had a blowout. Yeah. Unbelievable. I actually felt like I put the moz on her because I was watching a bit of it on the weekend and she shot 67-64. It was a three-round tournament. She was three in front through two rounds, and I just didn't expect this. But I can, you know, clearly remember the moment when I wrote the headline, because we do the headlines on the golf.org website, and it said, Minji Lee in control in Japan, which, as it turns out, was not ideal. She just fell away very quickly. I think Nasa Hatooka from Japan caught her very early, obviously started before her on the last day and caught her. So I think she may have been kind of caught up to by the time she started out. Then she had a couple of doubles early in a round and ended up shooting 78, which we haven't really seen from Minji at all this year. She ended up dropping to tied 15th, which at the end of the day, I mean, she had a great opportunity there to kind of keep the pressure on. She's second on the points standings for the year and second on the money list as well, so behind Arya Jatanagarn. But it was an opportunity lost. But at the end of the day, you know, maybe a bit of fatigue. Again, we spoke to Zach before about fatigue. Minji Lee has played 26 LPGA tournaments this year. She also played the Vic Open. And I think
26 tournaments?
Well, 26 plus 26. The Vic Open plus another one. I think she played at
Peter
Bonneville
Fowler,
as well.
Mike Clayton, Vijay Singh, 40 a year. But 26 tournaments, part-time.
All over the world as well. So she ended up 15th.
No wonder I went nuts, right?
That's right.
The LPGA is coming to an end, Hazy. It's the Blue Bay in China this weekend, so they're all playing again with that points race and the $1 million bonus on the line. So they go back to Florida next week for the Tour Championship, and that decides all of those things.
Have you done any maths on what Hannah Green has to do?
Well, Hannah Green's in the field.
Hannah Green started out at Blue. She's part of the first hole, we can report.
Oh, okay. We're recording this live on Wednesday, so
Hannah Green started out with a par. She's first group out in Hainan.
Yeah, Hannah's in the field. Have you ever been to Hainan, by the way?
I've been to Hainan, yep.
What's the course like?
I haven't been to the golf course. It'll be no good. Having spoken to Sue's caddy, so as caddy, it'll guaranteed to be no good.
It is a big week for Hannah Hazy because she's tied 75 in the points race. She needs to be in the top 80 to get her. I'm just going to try to get this right. Top 72 to get to get into the Tour Championship next week, and she's 75th, so she needs to do some work there, and she needs to be top 80. In the money list to get a card for next year. So it's a big week for her.
It is. It's big. And
she's had a pretty good year, I think. But
she'll be.
If she doesn't get a card, she still gets some status. So.
She'll be fine, though. I mean, she's 72 with. This is the last tournament.
She's about 20 or 30 grand ahead of the 75th person, I believe. Yeah, so.
Yeah, she'll be fine. Yeah.
Should be okay.
No problem.
Big week, or another couple of young guys, your peers, Zach, who've done. One of them's already done very well. Little Brett Coletta, who sat in your very chair a few weeks ago. He did really well and advanced through the second stage of the web.com to a Q school in Murrieta, California. He was just lay low in the last round, but that's a really good achievement. He finished fifth there and advanced to the final stage in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, he actually rang me when I was at the airport on Sunday, about to come back after the Queensland Open. And yeah, we had a good chat, and he's been playing really, really well all year, Brett, on the Canadian Tour, like shooting unbelievable scores. And so, yeah, it's no surprise he's a gun. So he was just chip away at it. And
have you played with him in the last 12, 15 months?
I played with him at the New South Wales Open last year. And I think he had 66 in the first round. Like, he just knows how to go low. So perfect format for him for Q School. And I think he'll go well.
Expect big things of him.
Yeah, I'd get on and hold on if I was any punters.
He's a flusher, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. He's an absolute flusher. Yeah. Another one of your mates, maybe even your roommate. You might have roomed with him a couple of times. I'm not sure. You wouldn't room with Min Woo Lee.
No, I wouldn't.
No, you're good mates with him. I know, mate. He started off this morning with a fine 4-under round in his first round of the second stage of Q School. In Texas, TPC Craig Ranch in McKinney. What do you make of his chances over there? He hasn't been performing at his best in the last few weeks, but his best should get through here, do you think? That was a question, not a statement. I should.
Yeah.
I
think if he plays half decent, I reckon he'll get through. He's a very good player, Min. So obviously, I think he's pretty good from the front. So 68 will set him up pretty nicely, and I think he'll cruise in pretty easily. I reckon. Fingers crossed for the little fella.
Nice.
Where's the final?
The final is in. I'm not sure, actually. That's a good question. It's December the 6th to the 9th, I think. So it must be, it's got to probably be in Florida or right on the West Coast. Actually, it might be in Arizona, having said that. Right. Might be in Arizona. So definitely somewhere down south in the States anyhow. While we're there, this is, we're blessed to have so many great results at all levels. We already mentioned Robin Choi. On the collegiate front over there, that way, Gabby Ruffles. An extraordinary achievement this week, stitched up in the final of the Eastlake Cup, which is basically a preview of the NCAA championships. It's a huge thing. And her USC team, University of Southern California, beat Stanford 3-2 based on her beating in the final anchor match the world number 7, Andrea Lee. A tremendous achievement and heightened by the fact that it was broadcast nationally on the Golf Channel, live at collegiate golf. It's an extraordinarily different world. And we're going to talk to later on about golf TV, Blake. You've finally been talking about this for ages. I should have also mentioned I'm really dropping the ball here today, but Peter Lonard's going to be our special guest in the second segment. But we're also going to chat to the people from Discovery Channel around golf TV. So hopefully we can get to see a bit more golf through other channels other than just Foxtel. So we'll talk to them a bit later on. But Gabby, a tremendous achievement. She's gone from strength to strength, and the USC team's now ranked number one in the United States.
She's only played golf for, what, five?
Four years.
It's unbelievable, really. I mean, it's a huge level of talent that we're talking about there. So, kind of sky's the limit.
So from a tennis player at 14.
Yeah. Florida State champion.
On national television at age 18, anchoring the number one team in American collegiate golf to victory over the world number 7.
Golden era.
Super impressive. Super impressive.
Did you watch her come through the ranks, VIS-wise?
She's never involved sort of with me that much with the VIS, but because she sort of only really started golf.
Yeah.
Only sort of a couple of years before she's gone over to play college golf. So I never really had that much to do with her on the golfing front. But obviously knowing Ryan and sort of hearing how she came through, it was, there was... you sort of expected big things, but you sort of didn't expect that quickly.
So, yeah.
So it's super, super impressive.
Another name, it's a bit off Broadway. It shouldn't be. A young guy from Mount Lawley Golf Club in Perth. He'd managed to play for Western Australia a couple of years ago when in the Interstate Series that was held on his home soil over there. Jordan Duell won a tournament called the McDonough Cup in Orlando for Columbus State University. His first win as a collegiate golfer. He was the Peach Belt Conference Freshman of the Year earlier this year in the previous season. So congrats, Jordan. I know you're a big listener of the podcast, as they all are, Muzz.
No, I don't know why anyone wouldn't listen to the podcast, Daisy.
But that's amazing, Clayton. Like we don't talk collegiate golf much, or we hadn't until recently anyhow, but there seems to be a growing number of people heading in that direction.
Yeah, well, Jordan Duell is actually Mount Lawley, where the WA Open was a couple of weeks ago. They love him over there. So, he's obviously going super well.
Fantastic.
There's a bit of a graveyard, that college system, isn't it, for Australians?
Yeah, and
out of there? Who's been any good? Apart from Elkington and...
Well, there's one major.
I'm sure there have been a few, but I think...
Mark Allen? Adam Scott?
Oh, he hated it and came back. I would have thought... the majority of our better players have come out of here.
Lindsay Wright, Catherine Kirk.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Been some really good players. It's just
there have been some, but I don't think it's necessarily the greatest system to go in.
What would you say the Golf Australia attitude to a young player going to college or staying here would be, Hazy? Because I would have said it's... Zach, you might have even spoken to someone about that on your way through. I mean, it's kind of... You choose, isn't it?
Attitude? Yeah, I'd be interested to hear what Muzz has got to say about it, because I'm sure it would have come up, if not for him, if for other people around him. But until recently, I think the collegiate system was a bit of a no-no, but from a GA perspective. But I think it's a matter of how your game can develop, and then they're happy to encourage other aspects. So, collegiate coaches and et cetera, if they just keep everyone in the loop, you know, just keep everyone informed at home about, you know, what's the progress, what they need to do and all that stuff so that the game isn't lost to the Australian system. Mm. That's how I understand it.
Yeah, I think a prime example of that would be maybe Ruben Sundaja, who played up in Iowa and incredibly sort of he played great in Australia and then went over there and had a fantastic 4 years there and he obviously got a degree out of it and he's super super intelligent young fella. So it sort of depends on what individual you are and what you see. If you're sort of going over there sort of a bit half-assed about it, then you sort of it might not be the way, but if you go over there fully confident, knowing that that's the system that you want to be in, it sort of it will probably work. But
who are our best six players? You'd say Leishman, Day, Scott, and Smith, and Minji and Sue. They are best six players.
Yep.
So Adam had a year there, and the rest of them didn't go there at all.
Yeah.
Which is not to say it's you know.
It's hard to say because I think so many people get to 17 or 18 and realize, especially on the women's side of things, that they can actually the game actually stands up on a world level if they're good enough, like Minji and Sue. Why would I go and spend 4 years knocking it around, you know, half-baked tracks on the US where you can go out and make money and make a lot of it?
Yeah, with a country that's not dominating women's golf. I mean, none of the Koreans are going there.
No. So, no, I'm not saying it's a great advocate. I'm not a great advocate for it, but I am saying that there are a lot more Australians doing it now than there ever have been. And it's great to see a couple of them, especially Gabby there at the absolute top of the tree. So and just while we're at it on the, you know, on the amateur side of things, the Order of Merit, the Golf Australia Order of Merit winners were announced this week as well. Grace Kim won both the Open Age Women's and the Junior Girls Order of Merits, which is a phenomenal achievement. Dave Micheluzzi won the Men's Order of Merit, just knocked off someone, I'm not sure his name, Zach Murray, I think it was, into second place. Any thoughts about that?
I've never heard of him. He must have just come from the woodwork.
He looks like he came from the woodwork.
I don't need a haircut.
The boys, Connor McKinney from WA, young fella, not built, or shorter version of you, but built in the same sort of skinny mould. Great young fella, Connor McKinney.
I played him at the Aussie Am.
Oh, did he stitch you up?
Oh, I just pipped him, but he had me on toast all day, and then I just sort of got him on. He three-parred the last time.
Oh, that's right.
But
unfortunately, yeah. Unfortunately for him.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, yeah. Unfortunately for him, but
every shot makes somebody happy, right?
He's incredible. Like, he's gonna be.
How old is he?
15.
Oh, he's a little kid.
He might have just turned 16.
Okay, right. But, so he's a young kid. Yeah.
Born in Scotland. Another one that Huggy can claim.
Karis Davison, and
but he's
he's just got a bit of go about him.
He really has.
Yeah, he's got a lot of go about him. So
it's a name to keep an eye out for, Clates. That's for sure. Yeah. And on the Connor Fuchs, it was the runner up to Connor McKinney. Connor Fuchs coming from Kalgoorlie, and he'll make his Australian Open debut next week as the Australian Junior Champion. So he's another one to look out for. A solidly built left hander.
Yeah, I know his uncle. Sean Clues, who caddies on the LPGA Tour, caddies for, he used to caddy for Sandra Gale.
Oh, is that right?
Yep. Who's he caddying for now? He's caddying for Amy Yang, I think. He's caddying for Amy Yang.
Oh, he's gotten a couple of good bags.
Yeah, he caddied for Sue for a bit. Yeah, he's been around for.
Are we going to get to the new number one, Hazy?
We are in 2 seconds, Blakey. Yep. Two more I'll Order of Merit winners. Kim Burke from the Central Coast of New South Wales won the senior women's. And on the senior men's, Greg Rhodes from up around Mildura, Kumiala way, up that way. 4 years in a row, he's won the Senior Men's Order of Merit. That's quite an amazing achievement from Greg Rhodes. So well done to him. Yeah, you better tell us, Blakey, about the new world number one.
Yeah, well, Justin Rose, who's been there before, beat Li Haotong in a playoff in the Turkish Open, and he's back to number one. I just did a list this morning because it just seemed to me that it had jumped around a lot. Koepka had been number one for 2 weeks. So I went back to August 2015 when there was a bit of a significant change, and it's been rotating around. So how many world number one male players have there been since then, do you reckon? How many different ones, world number ones?
Six.
Seven. So it went Spieth, McIlroy, Day, Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, Justin Rose, then Koepka, now back to Justin Rose. So there's
the question is, who's the best player? I mean, Nicklaus wasn't number one from 1964 till 1980, but he was the best player.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say Koepka right now. Just because he's made a record.
When we look back in 20 years' time, who's going to be the player of the generation?
Of those guys there, I'm struggling to put my finger on. I hope that it's Jordan
Rory.
Spieth.
Is it Rory? Isn't Rory the best player?
Well, he was for 2 years, and he can't scratch himself right now.
Well, he can scratch himself. But
what's your thoughts on Rory at the moment, Clay?
No, I don't see him play enough. He should only shoot some not great last rounds. And I think Rory's. I think he's an amazing
You think he's
player.
The best?
Well, I don't know. I think they're all terrific players, but there's no Tiger there. There's no one who's jumped ahead of the rest. Mind you, Tiger and Nicholas were freaks, you know, and you. You know, the question is who's going to be the next dominant player? Because they said in the pre-Tiger, I remember them saying there's never going to be another dominant player because there were too many good players. Nick Price and Norman and Feldo and Langer. No one's ever going to Curtis Strange and Kite. No one's ever going to dominate again like Jack did. And then Tiger came and dominated like no one else since. So who's going to be the next dominant player is the most interesting question.
I can't see any one of those seven or eight being that person. Yeah, the seven guys you just read out, Blake. I can't
Spieth,
see anyone.
McElroy, DJ, Thomas, Rose, Koepka.
I can't see Day playing long enough. I can't see Dustin Johnson being anything but erratic at best.
Yeah, well, they're better than that, but yeah.
They're all number ones. But
I mean, Koepka's been pretty impressive.
He'll give it up, I reckon, before he has enough to fill his resume as a legend.
I think so.
Not enough love for golf.
Not enough love for golf. Mm. I don't know. I'd love it to be Day, obviously, but I think of those lot. I think Jordan Spieth has got the capacity to do it, but you wouldn't. He hasn't got a dominant game.
No, you've got to have a dominant game, don't you? I mean, Tiger and Nicholson, Hogan and Jones had dominant games. I mean, they were better than everyone else by a stretch. I mean, Greg was week to week. Greg was a lot better than everyone else. He wasn't better than Faldo when it mattered, but he was. Which was, let's clarify, on the last hole of the major, Faldo always hit the flag and Greg didn't, but. Now, Greg was a dominant week-to-week player for a long time, wasn't he?
He absolutely was. Have you got any thoughts on that? You've seen him play?
Well, I'm sort of on Clates' path. I think Rory's the best player out of a lot of them as a whole. Obviously, Koepka's results over the last...
Especially in majors.
Yeah, obviously, especially in majors, sort of make his name stand out because he's been able to put the runs on the board. But I think Rory as a player, probably the best.
We're skipping one, aren't we?
Eldrick?
No, the Bryson.
Oh, wow.
Who's won more times than Ricky Fowler now.
He's number five now, so.
Yeah.
Four times this year.
Well, we're all forgetting about him, really. I mean, maybe he's the eccentric lunatic who.
Well, he gets it done, and we're talking Bryson DeChambeau, just to clarify. Another win at the Shriners this week in Las Vegas. Clates an incredible putt on the 16th hole when he was having the world chase him down. An eagle putt from off the fringe there on that par five. What is it about him that separates him, aside from the clubs and the science and all that sort of stuff?
I don't know. I haven't watched him play enough. But I saw him play at Huntingdale.
Yep.
He played well. He's a good player. They're all really good.
I played with him.
You played with him?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you see that...
What was he like to play with?
What's he doing that's different from... Oh, you played with him at Huntingdale?
I played with him in the Masters in the third round at Huntingdale.
I watched him play the last round. I remember I flew him from America that morning and... Watched him play the last day, and he had a chance to win there. He's a terrific player. I mean, good technique and solid and smart and thinks about the game and understands where to hit it and where not to hit it. And
yeah, I think when it comes to as you progress at levels of golf, obviously from whether you go Australian tour, European tour, or Asian, and then to the US tour, it becomes all belief. I think if you get to the US tour, you've obviously got the skills.
Mm.
But it's if you believe that you can go out there and win. And once you've put yourself in that position, like Bryson has multiple times this year and has been able to get the trophy, I think he just believes that it's not going to happen every time. But if you've got that strong enough belief, stronger than the other guy you're competing against, then 99% of the time you're going to win.
I should have done my research on that. Someone I read this week said predicted a year or so ago, he'd either be in a straitjacket.
Was that Scott Michaud? Who was it? Was someone from... Yeah,
someone like that.
He'll either be in a straitjacket or a top five in the world. He said, I guess I was wrong.
Yeah, yeah. it's fairly apt because he's five now, Blake, is he?
He's five in the world. Yeah, we should mention Cameron Davis was tied 28th in that tournament, the Shriners. So that's a decent result for him, getting a bit of cash on the board. Obviously, him and Curtis, and particularly those two, are trying to get their money up now, aren't they, to...
They are, and it was really important for Cam Davis because he is coming home to play the Australian Open and the Australian PGA Championship and foregoing that last tournament in the, whatever they call it now, the Fall Series in the US to do that. So Curtis will stick around in Georgia and play, I understand, and Cam Davis is obviously coming home to join Cam Smith as the... So
Curtis is not playing next week?
Pretty sure that Curtis is going to stick around over in the United States, and he just has to.
Yes,
I mean, it's an unfortunate situation. I know he wants to play in the Australian
Open. We should ask Peter Lonard about that, Hazy, later on when we talk to Peter about,
that's a good idea.
About coming back to play the events in Australia and that whole debate.
And that's a really good idea. We'll make sure we do that. So Peter Lonard is coming up on the other side of a break we're going to have here in a second. Peter Lonard, of course, a dual Australian Open champion. And this week, as we revive again the Road to the Open series, we're going to talk to the 2003-2004 winner, the man who dominated Australian golf for a few years around the turn of the century. And can't wait to have chat to Peter Lonard on the other side of this break.
Hi, I'm Minji Lee, and I'm proud to be an ambassador for MyGolf, Australian Golf's National Junior Program. One of my favourite things about coming back to Australia is seeing all the kids getting into golf. MyGolf is every Aussie kid's first step on their golfing pathway. It's all about fun and friendship, learning golf and life skills in a safe and healthy environment. So, if your child is between 5 and 12 years old, be sure to find a program near you at mygolf.org.au.
Hey, it's Jeff Ogilvy. I can't be in Australia very often, but I love keeping up with everything on Inside the Ropes podcast. Good bunch of guys, and I love listening.
Well, welcome back to Inside the Ropes, and we're absolutely delighted today to have one of Australian golf's modern legends with us. He's probably going to giggle when I say that to him, but as a two-time winner of the Australian Open, Peter Lonard is golfing royalty in Australia, and we're absolutely thrilled to have you with us today, Peter. Firstly, g'day, and where do we find you this morning?
Well, this morning I'm at Twin Creeks Golf Club preparing for a pro-am for the New South Wales Open. So, we're teeing off at 1:30, apparently 100% chance of rain and storms from about 12 till 3. So it's going to be a very interesting day.
And you're still loving golf?
Yes. You know, sometimes. I've got to say I dislike it more than I used to at times. But, I'm slogging away. It's all I've done since I was probably 18, 19 years old. And it's, habit forming. I just love playing golf. And the opportunity to play arises, I'll probably take it most times.
And that's what you're famous for, isn't it? Really, you've barely had a day since you were 18 or 19 at Oaklands, and you've just been plugging away. You've been doing everything around golf pretty much nonstop.
Yeah, I suppose if you look through the whole career or the whole time I played, I had the Ross River there like a long time ago, so there was probably a couple of years off, and then we got back into golf and things went okay. Gave up my club job, went to Europe, ended up in America. And pretty much played nonstop until I was probably in my 40s, early 40s. And then, old age caught up with me, got a bit of back problems and stuff. So, but I'm still playing every day, practicing most days. And, I just enjoy it. So, while I can still enjoy it, I may as well keep playing.
Are you addicted?
Well, addicted, stupid. It's a toss up. I don't really know. But I always figured that like most younger guys, I'd said I'll never play the seniors tour, and when I'm 50, I'll just move back to Australia and that. But even though I've played a lot, and I've travelled all over the joint all my life, still to this day, when I play poorly or do something wrong, I had this. I get in the car or get on the plane and I'm still thinking of ways to improve my game, or how can I fix my game and try and get back to where I was or whatever. So I think while that still happens, I'm still going to play. The day I get in the car and go, I can't, I'm not interested in fixing it and I'm not interested in doing the work to try and fix it, well, then that's probably time you chuck the towel in.
Well, mate, we've got you on specifically this week. We'll talk to you about other things as well, but it's now, where are we? We're coming around to 15 years since you won the first of your two Australian Open titles. Does it seem like yesterday? Because we can joke about all that other stuff, but you are one of the legends of Australian modern golf anyhow.
It seems like a hell of a long time ago, I must admit. Moona Lynx, all I ever wanted to do was win one Australian tournament, whether it was the Masters, the Open, or the PGA. I suppose my background was from the PGA, so PGA was a very important one. But to somehow stumble in the first Australian Open I sort of stumbled into, pretty much the same with the second one at the Australian. I wasn't really on the board there till last minute, and then all of a sudden I'd won. So, it was always great honours just to play in them, but to actually win them has, been extra special.
Just that first one at Moona Links 2003, Pete, it's Blakey here, by the way. A couple of memories of that. I think that was the Open at Moona Links where the players all complained. It was the first time we'd been there. Does that sound right to you? And yes. A lot of the players were unhappy with the course. And you were one who didn't say anything about the course. You just plotted your way around it. And from memory, you nearly hit it in the bunker on the very last hole, second shot. Missed the bunker by about a foot, I reckon. And you made your birdie, I think, and then closed it out. And I also remember you walking in and shouting the bar. I wonder how much that... How much that cost you?
Well, because I was a bit silly, I made that a yearly thing when I won whatever I won. So, I tried to cap it at 5,000, but I think we might have stepped over the mark there on a couple of the, particularly the PGAs that call them. But anyway, it didn't hurt that much then. Now that I look back, it hurts a bit. But
you didn't Moona mind Links that course, Moona Links?
I thought it was fine. I didn't know what everyone was complaining about. Obviously. Mm. You know, it was in an area when, you could get 100 kilometre hour wind. And I still remember, I stayed on the course that week, and the next morning, the Monday morning, if it wasn't blowing 100 miles an hour, I'd give up. All the scaffolding had blown over, and it was just absolutely the gnarliest place you've ever want to be at. But, I had no problem with it. And, I don't know what everyone was fussed about. But, yes, it was quite funny. I still remember... One of the things I really remember about it was, after you win, they present you with the trophy and you go in to meet the sponsors and, I think probably IMG ran it in those days. And anyway, I walked in there and Mr. Thompson was there, and I walked over to him and said, "Hi, Mr. Thompson, my name's Peter, Peter Lonard, blah, blah, blah." And he looked at me over the top of his glasses. That's right. He said, "Well, you can call me Peter now." So it was quite a moment. So, I was part of the club, and it was a moment that I'll always remember.
It's a pretty remarkable way to get there too, birdie the 18th to get up. And was it Stephen Leaney you nudged into second spot?
I reckon it was, but I could be proven wrong on that one. I can't remember, to be honest with you.
Now, Pete, I remember when you played at Palm Meadows first when you finished third, right?
Yep.
With a really pretty crap swing, wouldn't you say?
I thought that was a lovely swing. What are you talking about?
The difference between that swing, I'm having a go, but the difference between that swing and the one you had when you won the Opens was a pretty remarkable transformation, wasn't it? I mean, you finished up being a modern kind of Kel Nagel, I always thought, just never missed a shot, never missed a fairway, never missed a shot. And that was far from the way you started out, I would say. Is that a fair summation of what happened between 1990 and 2004?
Well, everybody thinks that I changed my swing massively over that period of time, but, like Palm Meadows Cup, was probably the first time that I actually got in the limelight, and I was probably 80 kilos ringing wet, had a long loop, a long swing, but I tried to work on levels and the width of my swing, which, in those days I was working with Gary Edwin. I'd been seeing him for a couple of years, probably 3 or 4 years by then.
Oh, so you've been seeing Gary when you played well at Palm Meadows?
Yes.
Okay.
So I started... And as it turned out, Gary was the pro at Palm Meadows in those days. I originally started seeing him in Canberra, which was probably my second year as a trainee. I started seeing Gary. So anyway, over a period of time, once I got the Ross River and got a little lazy and all that sort of stuff, I put on like 35 kilos, and so now I'm 115 kilos, and I swing it back. I feels the same, goes back halfway. So everyone thought that I changed the way I swing the club, but it was actually just I was bigger and the club didn't go back as far. So, we still worked on the same sort of things in those days, as far as just keeping your levels the same and the width of your arms the same around your body. So, it looked considerably different. Like massively different, but it was actually more, it wasn't because I tried to change the swing, it was because my body shape had changed and it just wasn't as loopy and loose as it was when I was thin.
So was the Ross River a blessing in disguise in a way?
Pretty big disguise.
I don't know. That was a big disguise. Well, it's hard to tell. You know, like, I didn't play golf as an amateur as a kid or any of that. So, you know, I went from being a trainee to just playing on tour or playing, you know, pro-ams to be honest with you, I had no idea what I was doing. I was just doing it. And, you know, basically everything was surrounded around, you know, I had $5,000 in my bank account. And I was going to play until I ran out of money. And I managed to dodge it. I went close a few times. But, as far as short game was, I didn't know anything about short game. I just did it.
Yeah.
So, I think as I got older, you know, the Ross River was a blessing in disguise because it got me back to where I could relax a bit and have a bit of a think about it. My swing improved. My short game got a little better. I went to a couple of pelts things and all that sort of stuff. And, it just gave me, working in the shop and that gave me that little backup. So I never got belted.
Yeah.
You know, I think if I didn't get the Ross River, I could have stayed on tour, probably gotten belted up because I just didn't know what I was doing. And then, you know, it's a very fine line between getting off the tour and never coming back and getting on the tours, if you know what I mean.
I guess one good thing about the tour then was you could come out and make the cut, and if you made the cut, you kept playing. I mean, you basically got your card back just by making cuts.
Yes. You know, yes. So what so I originally got my card because I made like 10 cuts in a row. I finished 40th every week, but then I got 57th on the money list, and then the first tournament was Palm Meadows, made the cut on the mark, shoot like 9 under on the weekend, played with Wayne Riley, which was an experience, and then I finished 7th. Yeah. You know, I got $27,000 in the bank. I think I'm loaded. I don't, you know, I'm thinking I can retire now. I don't need to do any of it the rest of my life. But it didn't take me long to realize that doesn't work that way.
Hey, so, Pete, you're very self-deprecating in the way that you talk about your golf, but you won 2 Australian Opens, including the Centenary Open at the Australian in 2004. You won the Masters and you won the PGA as well, I think, twice. So it's a pretty amazing record. I just wonder how you felt about yourself out on the tour. Did you ever, were you confident enough to play in the big tours? Because you obviously won in America as well. You won the Heritage Tournament in 2005. You played twice in the President's Cup. So that's a record of an outstanding world player. But how did you feel when you're out there playing with Tiger Woods and the others?
I actually felt really comfortable. You know, I think, I probably didn't have the short game to really push in any of the massive tournaments, like the majors and that. I wasn't that streaky putter or what have you, but I could hit it. I could hit it well enough to keep myself in the game. I was probably, you know, I was never that guy. Like if you're talking of like a racing car driver, you know, I could chuck out the same times. You know, not the best times, but I could chuck out the same time continuously, whether it's rain or dry or whatever. But I didn't, I very rarely had that really low score in me that, you know, really set you apart from others. So that was probably the killer in my career, I think. If I hit it good enough to, you know, probably throw, you know, 7, 8, 9 under in tournaments, but I never really did it, you know, regularly, whereas a lot of good players just do that.
Pete, I just had a question about sort of off the back of the Ross River and sort of the back injury, about if there was a point in time in your career where you sort of put a bit of emphasis on the fitness regime, because I know I played with you last year and you're still looking fit as a fiddle. So I just wanted to know whether there was a point in time where you sort of thought maybe there's a bit of a key to put some emphasis on the fitness side of things.
Well, I think there's always, you know, when I got the Ross River, I was as fit as anyone. The week before, I'd actually been warned that my body fat was too low and that they actually said, you know, you could get a virus or something and it'll really knock you off your socks or off your feet. And I thought that was just ridiculous because I was thinking, you know, the fitter you are, the better you are. But anyway, so as it turned out, we got a bit chubby, and then you know, once I got back on tour, when I went to America was actually when I started to work on my fitness quite a bit. So, you know, I was a 5 day a week outside of the golf, and then as like probably late when I did my back in 08, so I probably had a couple of years where I was a bit, you know, I probably didn't work as hard as I should have, but you know, the back's pretty restrictive and I was trying to play golf and all that whatnot. So it wasn't until 2010 I came back, spent a lot of time, well, I was rehabbing, you know, they thought, had like hip operations and all that sort of stuff, trying to ease the pressure off my back, which didn't really work. And then I met a guy called Tony Ayoub, who was at that stage the physio for the Bulldogs at the NRL team. And, you know, he said, oh, if you want to come in, you know, come and have a chat. I'll have a look at you and see if we can sort you out. So anyway, I went down to a Bulldogs training one day. It was a little embarrassing because, you know, I walk into the physio unit and, you know, there's five guys and, you know, he introduces me to all the players. And anyway, the first guy said, oh, what's wrong with you? He says, oh, yeah, I got a cracked sternum, but I'll be good for Friday night. You know, and the other guy.
You're a Canterbury fan, aren't you, Pete?
Yeah, so I'm a big Bulldog fan. So it was quite, you know, I felt uncomfortable being in there in the first place. You know, and the next guy, what's wrong with you? Oh, I pulled the bicep tendon off my off my bicep, but I reckon I'll be good for Friday night. And, anyway, it's like that through all of them. And then, you know, finally one goes, what's wrong with you? I said, oh, I got a bad back. And he said, oh, how long have you been out? And I said, oh, 2 years. So, so, bit of a different game and a little embarrassing. But anyway, Tony sort of took me under his wing and, you know, sent me to, you know, a lot of people trying to improve, you know, what I've got, and, you know, made a massive difference. So it's, I'm definitely, I can manage it. Whereas before I was hopeless with it, I, you know, had just kept going out all the time. So, you know, I owe him a lot for that. Now all I got to do is pay him back by playing good.
Pete, do you reckon there was a time, maybe I'm going to guess and say if this were true, that sort of 2001, 2002, 2003, where you physically intimidated some of your opponents when you were at your strongest? I know that it's not that sort of sport, but that some people, you never missed, as Clate said, you never missed a fairway and you just strode around like you owned the place in a good way.
Yeah, I don't know about intimidate, but I thought in those days that I could hit it well enough to, if I could get within four with nine holes to go, I didn't think I was going to make a mistake. So I think a lot of guys got the feeling that if they made a mistake, I was going to catch them. Maybe I don't know. Probably best to ask them. But I just got comfortable. Australia was, you know, the beauty of Australian golf in those days was, you know, it was firm and bouncy, and you know, it was all the courses were set up just the way I really enjoyed playing golf. You know, I could hit it along the ground if I want. I can, like, into the wind, I could hit the ball along the ground and roll it 150 yards if I wanted to.
Mm.
You know, those days are sort of disappearing in Australian golf where they're making everything softer. But, yeah, I just, you know, I got onto the US tour, which I went to the tour school just to have a go. And all of a sudden I got in there, and then, you know, I was consistent enough to make cuts continuously. You know, I think my confidence got up to the thing where I just thought, well, I'm going to make every cut every week. And, you know, if I'm within, you know, four or six coming into the last day, I can win. And that's the way I felt in Australia. America, you know, I didn't, like I said, you know, I wasn't shooting that low, low score, but I could, you know, I could throw consistent scores under par.
So now looking back, do you, the heritage that Blakey asked you about before, is that the thing that you know is your proudest achievement, or is it the things you've done in Australian golf?
I think probably the proudest things was probably the Australian tournaments. You know, I think I always remember the first tournament, the Masters, Australian Masters in 97, I think it was.
Yeah.
You know, it was the first year I think it was probably the second time Tiger had come out. You know, and all the journalists were, you know, what's it like to play for second prize and all that. And in that at that time I was, well, they weren't asking me. They were asking like Robert Allenby and Stuart Appleby, and they were all getting their knickers in a twist. And you know, I was just a club pro, so, you know, I was never a chance, but, you know, I got to play with Tiger on the Saturday, and, you know, it was quite a buzz. It was cool, you know. It was so I look back at that, you know, my set of clubs was actually a trial set from a shop. I actually had price tags on it. I remember Freddie Couples having a laugh about, he said, what's on the shaft there? I said, oh, that's a, you know, that's a price tag for my trial, for my new set, which he thought was absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, so looking back, that was the turning point in my whole career, I reckon. I think that's when I thought, because I decided I'm not going anywhere, I'm going to stay in the shop unless I win. And I think I'd finished second like 9 times or something. And I thought, you know, maybe I'm going to be the club pro until, you know, I get assassinated by a committee member or something one day. But anyway, so I won that, and then that was it. That was my decision made, and I thought I'll go and chase bigger and better things.
So when you walk back into Oatlands now, you know, is it sort of like Norm walking into Cheers? Is that what goes on out there?
Not quite. It's changed a little bit. It's changed quite a lot since those days. But I go back probably once a year and have a bash with a couple of the members that I've always played golf with, and you know, the course is the same. You know, the members are really good, and you know, although they have aged a bit, like I haven't aged at all, but a few of the old blokes, they're looking real crusty. But you know, it's always good to go back. I think they've still got my that first jacket in the clubhouse there somewhere.
Awesome.
That's a good segue. Relating to your fatherhood, you became a father. I think you must have been nearly 50. You're 51 now. So, your little daughter,
yes,
Yvonne, how's that going?
Yeah, had a bit of an accident. Yes, that's an understatement of life changing. So, yes, it was wasn't quite the call I was expecting. I was playing like a web.com in Columbia at the time, and my girlfriend at the time, Ali, phoned me up and said, oh, "I've got something to tell you." But my caddy was sure that I was getting, or certain I was getting dumped. So anyway, it turned out to be the opposite, didn't it? And you know, it was the first time I'd ever FaceTimed with somebody. So that was a good test of my poker face. So it was, but it's, you know, it's been an incredible ride so far. And you know, she's only 13 months, but you know, she's got a great little personality. She's got a bit of a temper, and she's stubborn as hell. So I'll accept responsibility for the stubbornness, but I'll try and palm the crankiness off to someone else.
That's pretty brave from you there, Regan. So, mate, and the golf continues on. I mean, you've got something. I understand that you're going to miss the Australian PGA, as you said, an event that's dear to your heart. But you're going to miss it this year because you've got something probably bigger on your slate.
Well, it's just the week of the US Tour School for some reason. You know, that's the one shame. You know, bad luck or whatever it is. You know, a lot of these tour schools are on at the time the Australian tournaments are on. So, you know, it gets in the way of not only me, which is I'm probably past it, but I'm going to the senior tour school. But it also, you know, really hurts the young kids that have a lot of potential that are going to Europe or, you know, America for the tour schools, for the web.coms or even the European tour. So, you know, they seem to miss out. And it's been like that forever. But, you know, it'd be good if they could actually work something around that. So, you know, those tournaments, you could come back and actually play in them.
Well, you loved playing the events in Australia. You've already touched on that. But I was reading an interview with you in the Golf Australia magazine just recently, Pete, where you talked about the Australian players coming back to play these events. And you said it was a no-brainer, you know, and you were questioning this idea that they need to come back and rest. How do you feel about that? Because we're just about to have an Australian Open without... obviously, they've got their reasons, but Jason's not playing, Adam's not playing, Mark Leishman not playing. How do you feel about that without necessarily potting them? But
No, I can pot them.
Okay, pot them.
I can pot them if you want them.
No, I'll get the...
You were a big one in favour of coming back and playing, weren't you?
Yes. Yeah. I think it's the right thing to do. It's like, you know, some guys talk about it like it's, you know, giving up a lifetime, but it, you know, in all honesty, it's like 2 or 3 tournaments a year. You know, I think it becomes difficult when maybe personalities from certain tournaments get involved, and maybe, you know, people get their nose out of joint, and you know, then they just go, oh, well, I'm not coming back. But how, you know, Adam and Mark have been, you know, great contributors to Australian golf up until, say, last year. You know, what happened with that, I don't, you know, with the Australian Open and all that, I actually don't know what happened. So obviously something upset somebody, and they're doing other things now, you know. Of course, you know, it's a tough one. But, you know, if you're in Australia, just go play. I used to love playing all the tournaments. Coolum was a cracker. You know, the Australian Open used to be on all the best courses in Australia we had to offer. You know, they're just fun to play. But, you know, I don't know whether the younger guys have that passion to play in Australia like probably we did. But, you know, I think when I was coming through, it was just expected, really.
Now, I saw you putting with the short putter up in Albury, but going to the tour school in America, clearly you can take back the long putter and pretend you're not anchoring it, but jam your fist into your jumper so that you leave crease marks when you pull it away. So,
but you don't intend to anchor.
You don't, just don't intend to anchor, right?
Yes. It's all about intention, I've learned. It's quite an incredible thing that's going on over there. There's a lot of guys that are upset about it. There's a lot of guys that don't care. But I suppose, you know, I don't think I'll be... Well, I won't be going back to it. But it's a... yes, it's a strange feat. I think, you know, I think initially I was irritated that the players took it to that level where they really haven't changed bugger all. But, you know, looking at it, I think it's just been a bad rule. They botched it. You know, either say it's okay or say it's got to be the shortest club in the bag and it's done.
So when you made your senior debut last year, was at the Open Championship in Britain,
yep.
And you look up and you see Bernhard Langer in front of you, does it give you the brace and bits that he's doing that?
No, to be honest with you, I hadn't really, until I got to the Open, I didn't even realise they were all using the broomstick. I think, or not all, but there were a few using the broomstick, and they, at Augusta, like 6 months earlier or 3 or 4 months earlier, I think I walked past the TV and Langer was there using the broomstick, and I thought, oh, it must be an old replay. It must be from like 10 years ago or something. Anyways, no, it's live. So, so I got a bit of a shock, but, it gets really awkward because, you know, intent, you know, oh, I just do it occasionally. It just brushes my chest occasionally. It just touches my shirt. You know, to me, it's, you either got to fix the problem or let it go. But at the moment, it's just in a nasty area, isn't it? Sort of. Yeah. Cast out on a lot of people or on a few people, and you know, I just can't believe now they go, it's okay.
Pete, you should see Clates. He's actually shaking in his chair over there. It's unbelievable.
Well, I just think it's, but for me, you have to be seen to be obeying the rule.
Yeah, of course.
There's got to be clear air between your fist and your jumper or your shirt.
Yes. Yeah.
You know,
when it first came out, I thought, oh, okay, well, there's going to be, you know, there's going to be, you know, 3 or 4 inches between the top of the club and your body. But that's not the way it's turned out. It's like, I just touched my shirt. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, and you may correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, if I smack a ball into a tree and it comes back and flicks my shirt, I'm pretty sure I'm penalised because that's part of my body. So,
yep.
But, you know, I may be wrong there. I don't know. But I've always thought that was the rule. So the old, I just touched my shirt. Well, if it's the same rule all the way through, it's part of your body, isn't it?
Yep.
So Pete, just I'm gonna so you don't get in trouble next time you see Bernhard Langer, I'll move you away. So if you do well at the Q School for the Champions Tour, is your plan to move back to the States sort of semi-permanently, or are you gonna sort of travel?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah, no, I'll go to, if I manage to get through the school, it's a, you know, it's a bit of a Hail Mary job. There's like, I think they give you out 5 cards. I think there's probably 100 players. So, you know, you've got to turn up and you've got to have a really good week. But, if I manage to get through, I'd love to, you know, go over there and play the senior tour. It's a fantastic, you know, events probably pretty much every second week. So, you know, you can maintain your, my back or whatever, you know, a little easier. You know, they play 3 rounds, so it's not as hard on your body. So, you know, it, like everybody thinks, you know, how hard can it be walking around golf course all day, every day? But I've got to say, once you get a bit older, it gets a bit wearing. So when you add the travel and everything else that goes with it. So, yeah, if I can get the opportunity, I'll go over there and pack my bags and take the family. And we'll probably do, well, as long as I can, probably 3 or 4 or 5 years over there, if I can, if I'm good enough. And then we'll come home.
And you avoid FaceTime with Ellie if you take everyone over there. So that's a good result.
Yes, I think life's a lot easier when they're all together. When we're well,
well, when you're all when together,
I think
you might have time for another accident. You want to be careful with that.
That's what happens when you stay fit, Pete.
I think we've, I think we've passed that stage. But then again, I thought we'd passed that stage before, so you never know.
Well, Pete, we wish you. We understand you're a busy man in front of the New South Wales Open this week. We really appreciate the time you've taken, and I know among us in the studio here and all the people listening, you've been an ornament to Australian golf, and we hope it continues for a long time. Good luck this week in the New South Wales Open and for the rest of the summer.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Hi, this is Sherelle McMahon. Swing Fit is the fun, healthy, social way for women to get started in golf. You'll learn the basics of the golf swing and how to putt over a 6-week program and get your whole body moving through yoga and Pilates-style exercises. You don't need any golf knowledge or equipment. Simply turn up in comfy clothing and get started. You'll be surrounded by like-minded people and receive constant support. So get outdoors, meet new friends and learn a sport that you can play for the rest of your life. To find a program near you, visit swingfit.com.au.
This is Rebecca Arter, professional golfer on the LPGA. Don't forget to listen to the podcast Inside the Ropes. Catch up on all the golfing news around the world.
Welcome back to Inside the Ropes, and we've got it. There's no expense spared when we're compiling this show, Zach, as you know, and we're going all the way to Japan now. We've got a very special guest, Alex Kaplan, who's the president and general manager of Discovery Golf, no less. And we're really excited to talk to Alex this week from Tokyo, because in 2019, in January 2019, Australia is going to become one of the first markets for a product called Golf TV, which Alex is overseeing. And it's going to have big ramifications for the way we watch golf in Australia, Alex. Welcome aboard.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So what is Golf TV? Well, first of all, let's just start off. What is Golf TV, and how will it change our the way we watch golf potentially in Australia?
Sure. So just taking a quick step back, this past June, Discovery, which is, as you know, one of the larger media companies in the world these days, we announced a major partnership with the PGA Tour, where essentially we are partnering with the tour to take over all of their media rights everywhere in the world except the U.S. So that's the live television rights, the digital rights, their website, the non-live catch-up rights, VOD, essentially anything that's sort of media, television related with the PGA Tour, we've acquired for the next 12 years. And we acquired those rights because we're making a big digital bet on golf. And we're going to use those rights to create what we're calling the home of golf, which is you said earlier, is called Golf TV. And it's going to be an ecosystem play where if you're a golf fan anywhere in the world, and I promise I'll get to Australia specifically, you're going to be able to log in or download the Golf TV app and watch live golf, watch catch-up golf, get local commentary. And eventually, over time, we want it to be a place where you can get reviews on the latest, greatest equipment, get travel advice, learn how to play with instruction, potentially even tee times or keep score. As betting becomes more prevalent in golf, you may add betting features. We want it to be kind of a one-stop shop for all things golf. Now, that is very much our long-term vision, and we, Discovery, have made a massive bet on golf, and so we're committed to doing this. But I'll say at launch, it's going to be really focused on the live and near-live viewing experience. And that's what you'll see in Australia. Golf TV will launch in January. It'll launch in beta. We're gonna probably learn and grow together. But essentially, what it's gonna mean is that golf fans in Australia are gonna have a new way to watch the PGA Tour, and we're gonna deliver the content, I hope, in a really innovative way that'll be exciting.
So, from our perspective, Alex, and I'm sure you've done the homework on this yourself, but we have almost all of our golf coverage these days from overseas relies on Fox Australia, an arm of Foxtel in the US, and only 30% take up of subscription TV in Australia, and not everyone's got the sports package, so even less than that as a percentage of the population has the capacity to watch tour golf at the moment. will this be available to everyone, and is it just as simple as downloading an app?
Yeah, well, first I want to say that, you know, Foxtel have been great partners for the PGA Tour. They've been great partners and continue to be great partners for Discovery. And so we fully expect that the PGA Tour will continue to be available on linear television. Our goal is to make sure that more people than ever have access to golf. To answer your question specifically for our Golf TV experience, it'll be available to everyone. All you're going to have to do is download the app or go to the website. Now, there will be pay tiers. We're probably not going to give away everything for free, but our goal is very much to make this available to the masses. So you're going to see a lot of great content in front of the paywall. You're going to see lots of different pricing strategies that I think make watching and getting in very easy and affordable.
So what's the, have you arranged a pricing structure yet? What would we, I understand that we'll be able to watch anything that the PGA Tour produces. So any of the six tours that come under their umbrella, if we wanted to plug in and watch all six of those, what were we looking at ballpark price-wise in your estimation?
Yeah, we have not announced our pricing yet in Australia. And certainly happy to jump back on with you guys when we do and talk about that. But what you're going to see is, I think, going to be very customer-friendly. The intent here is not to go charge $1,000 a year and bring in only the most affluent. We're in this for 12 years, hopefully more, because we want to grow golf. We want to get more people watching. So I think you're going to see, and I wouldn't just call it pricing. I call it pricing and packaging, because there's going to be a lot that is free. I think this is going to be a great experience where you're going to get a lot of golf without paying anything, and we're going to have lots of different tiers, regardless of what your economic situation is, where you're going to be able to enjoy a ton of golf. But I don't have today the pricing ready to be announced.
So, Alex, I'm watching, let's just give you a hypothetical. I'm watching the Shriners Hospital event from the States here, and I'm watching Jason Day go around there. An acquaintance of mine, Zach Murray, is playing on the PGA Tour China at the same time. Can I watch two things at different, you know, can you sort of kind of choose a different channel like that, or is it all going to be one stream?
Yep. Nope, you can choose. Don't think about these as linear channels. Think about it as a digital offering where you click on what you want to watch. And as long as that event is being produced, it'll be on Golf TV. You keep in mind, you use the PGA Tour China as an example. Not every one of those events is on TV, but as long as it's produced, we'll have access to it, and all you've got to do is click the button and watch.
So, Alex, is there scope down the track to have a broader range of products outside the US PGA Tour? Will you envisage in your 12-year period, you know, European Tour or Asian Tour or any, you know, even the Australian Tour coming on board?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're out there talking with a lot of different tours and golf content folks, and definitely the vision is to add to the offering on a country-by-country basis where it makes sense. Now, I'll say we're thrilled with the PGA Tour. We think it's where, you know, the best players in the world typically play, and so we think it's a great place to start, but you'll definitely see us add content, whether it's other tours, whether it's majors. We think there's some really interesting innovations that maybe aren't tours, but in terms of how we produce the content. I mean, imagine in Australia being able to have a Jason Day feed available for, you know, 80% of the tournaments, where you can watch every one of his shots, which you can't do today if he's not in contention. Obviously for Jason, he typically is, but from time to time it happens when he's not. And so all of that in the plan is something I think you'll see hopefully sooner than later.
And the LPGA, I assume, would be part of those thoughts as well. And then Ladies European Tour is a growing demand for women's golf.
Sure. We'll talk. We're interested in talking to everyone around golf. We really want to grow the golf ecosystem. And so if it makes sense for our customers, if it makes sense for golf and for the various tours, and we can make sense of it economically, we're interested in having those discussions. And look, I mean, for us, you know, I don't look at this as competitive. I mean, we're successful if golf is successful. So in so much as we can help that by putting more golf on Golf TV with Discovery, that's great. But overall, I'm rooting for everyone. I mean, we want to make more people. It's a great game with incredible stars, and I want more people interested in it. And that's what's best for us. And that's for us as we build out this product and continue to invest in it.
Alex, you probably don't know this, but I reckon for about 10 years now down in Australia, there's been a growing sort of scream from the public to get the Golf Channel on Foxtel, because we get the tournaments, but we don't get the Golf Channel. Well, this is probably something, you know, it sounds even better, to be perfectly honest, and more modern. You mentioned something just before about showing every shot of a particular player. I'm just interested in the specifics of that, because it's one of the great frustrations as Aussies. We watch and love our players going around, but if they happen to be playing in a tournament with Mickelson or Tiger in it and those players are up near the lead, we don't tend to see too much. You know, sure, you'll see Jason Day play, but if it's Curtis Luck, you know, 22-year-old first-year pro, he might be running fifth or something like that. You can see him on the scoreboard, but you can't actually... Obviously, the producers don't show a player like that on the coverage, so it's frustrating. There's a way around that?
Well, look, there's very real production challenges with what you're talking about. Unlike most sports, there are the cameras don't typically capture every shot from every player, and so. When we look at creating, I mentioned the Jason Day feed, or regardless of which player we did that for, we would have to, working with the PGA Tour or whatever governing body that we happen to be working with, we would have to essentially pay for and find a way to produce with additional cameras feeds that don't exist today. We'd have to have a group. It's kind of like you can see it today on PGA Tour Live, which exists in Australia.
Yeah,
featured the featured groups. It's essentially doing that with more players for all 4 days. And so it's doable. It's just a question of making sure we have a market for it. And I think that's what's great about Golf TV. I don't want to sit here on your show and commit that we're going to do that for every top Australian golfer on day one. But if we can build up an audience and there's a demand for it, we're all in. That is exactly the type of innovation that I think this is set up for. And, you know, now we've got to find a way to actually do it that makes sense for the business and makes sense, most importantly, for golf fans.
What does your research tell you about Australia?
Our research tells us that it's a great market for golf. Our research tells us that actually it's primed for digital, and more so than some. I mean, it sounds cliche. Obviously, everyone's on their phones, but we have a lot of high hopes for. That the Australian golf universe will really engage on smartphones and on digital in general. And I think it also, our research also tells us there's an opportunity to innovate. I think you said it, that, you know, the time zones are challenging, coverage of certain players are challenging, because oftentimes your best players aren't, you know, on your local tour. So we think there's a real opportunity to sort of play with how we deliver the content that makes the experience better for golf fans in Australia.
So last one from me, Alex. How will golf fans who are listening to this now, what's the next port of call as January 1 approaches? How do they keep up to date with what you're proposing and so they can get involved if they choose to?
Yeah, I mean, golftv.com will be up and running. You'll be able to download the app on iTunes and the Android App Store. And you'll see a lot of, we'll certainly make that readily available. You'll see it all over PGAtour.com when the season starts in early January. And so I'm glad you asked that question, but I'm pretty confident that if you're a golf fan in Australia, we're going to be, we're going to make sure that you can't miss Golf TV.
Well, I'm sure that's music to a lot of people's ears, because I know that there's a lot who haven't been able to watch the golf they'd like to through Fox TV arrangements in their own house. So, we're really grateful for your time today, Alex, and we look forward to having Discovery involved in what golf could become in Australia. Thanks very much.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Well, interesting to hear what that could become, Clates. I don't really know how that sounded to you from a technical side of things or whether it's of interest to you, but if it kicks off, it might allow Australian golf fans to see golf they may not otherwise have seen previously.
Yeah, the biggest problem is not seeing the majors, having to pay to see the majors.
Yeah.
It seems like that's the biggest, losing the majors off the major TV channels is not great for the 70% of people who don't have Foxtel.
And I publicly put on record again, I've chatted with the the government departments about that. Darius Oliver's having discussions with me offline about, you know, making sure that the anti-siphoning list doesn't affect that. And I think it's going to come down to a commercial decision between, you know, would a TV channel, a Nine or a Nine Gem, is it, or whatever it is, Nine Go, consider it financially viable to pick up a tournament? I don't think anyone's blocking them from doing it. It's just that we can't, other than the Masters now, realistically expect a main network to cover the whole thing these days. It just may not work financially with so many alternatives available. So I'm not sure how that works. Hopefully, what do you make of that, Blakey? Golf TV?
I think it can only be good. I don't see too much downside to it. I mean, we, as I said to Alex, we've been screaming for the Golf Channel for a while, and this is, you know, something like that. You know, maybe better, except that it's a streaming service. So, I think the key will be how much it costs. Really, he's not been able to say, or doesn't want to say, what it's going to cost. If it's, you know, I was speaking before about the NBA have got an app and a streaming service, for instance, and I know a lot of people who've got that. I think it's, you know, probably a couple of $100 a year, something like that. But you can also buy individual games if you want to watch them at that particular time. And this will be similar, I'd imagine.
Yeah. It's got scope. Let's hope that it's priced at a reasonable rate so that we can all enjoy it. I'd love to see, you know, a bit of Canadian tour or a bit of Latino or China or wherever it is, web, that we don't get to see at the moment. So, fingers crossed. That's all we can do, realistically.
What's happened to the Mickelson-Tiger match? Are we paying out $99 US to watch that out here, or it doesn't come here at all?
Hasn't been mentioned that I've seen on... Has anyone seen it on Fox, any promotion of it?
I've seen no promotion.
It makes it sound like we're not going to...
I think it would be an online thing from an Australian perspective. Just I don't streaming. Think it would be on Fox TV at all.
Tragedy not to be able to watch that.
Oh, it'd be shocking, yeah. Shocking. Can you imagine? There's going to be people stumping that $20 up. I don't think nearly as many people as they think they're going to get, but my thoughts on that are well documented.
You can go back and... For those who are upset at missing it, just go YouTube and put the 1977... British Open on. Watch that instead.
1977 British Open. Oh, that's Jack Nicklaus and Watson. Tommy Watson. Yeah, it's a bit Duel in the Sun. It's
a bit more. That's the one. Yeah, that's the one. I tried to watch that. I tried to watch the remake of Stenson and Mickelson the other night.
That was a great one too. But
yeah, well, somehow, that's what I watch all the time. I love it.
Somehow that Nicklaus Watson one has outlived them all. Really.
Yeah.
Hey, so you've been looking at some Jack Nicklaus material, haven't you?
I have. You're a bit much better at segueing than I am, Blakey. I've pinched this unashamedly off the Golf Digest, American Golf Digest website. It's called The Wisdom of Jack. And I just wanted to seriously, there's about 50 things here, and I tried to highlight them down to a manageable number, and I couldn't do it. There's about 35 things that I've highlighted, so I'll maybe just do a couple. But this is The Wisdom of Jack Nicklaus. Clates, you're going to be my man.
Before we go anywhere, Peter Thompson's book is anything that's in The Wisdom of Jack is more interesting in Peter Thompson's book.
There's better things from.
Yeah, it's better. Yeah.
Why? Why is it better?
Because it's
homespun.
Yeah. Well, he wrote it, a lot of it.
Yeah.
I think he was. Yeah, it's just better. It's just more interesting. But I mean, Jack's great. Jack says some great stuff. But Thompson's book is much more, obviously.
Peter Thompson on bunkers. I wasn't a very good bunker player, so I decided not to go in them. Is that
one of the quotes? I never wanted to be a good bunker player. Wanted to be a good bunker player. Yeah.
Well, let's go through a few of these until I see eyes start glazing over. Anyhow, I've always believed this is Jack Nicklaus. I've always believed the club should dominate you instead of you dominating the club.
Don't know what that means.
Nothing from anyone?
That's a feel he probably had. But anyway, does it make any sense to you?
Went straight over the old noggin, Clates.
Yeah, anyway, next.
Aim and alignment are by far the most important elements of the act of moving a golf ball from A to B. Rub the magic lamp, get the genie to give you any golf swing of your choice from history, and if you don't direct it correctly from the beginning, it still won't reduce your score by even one measly stroke.
That's true, except if you can aim up perfectly, and if you don't swing on plane, it's going to go sideways. I would have thought the plane was the most important thing. Yeah.
Well, Bubba doesn't aim.
Trevino aimed at 40 yards left, and Bobby Locke aimed at 40 yards right. And I mean, Jack was meticulous in lining up every shot. It was, so that worked for him. And it's not, obviously, it's not say he's wrong.
So, Clayton, Jack News, Nicholas was one, the first player that I ever saw, you know, just have a spot in front of the ball, a few metres in front, which a lot of players would still use that.
Yeah, the intermediate target.
Yeah, that's still very common, isn't it?
I use it.
Do you?
But, in fact, Peter Thompson would say exactly the same thing. So there's clearly a lot of wisdom in that.
The harder I want to hit a shot, the slower I try to begin the swing.
I love that. I'm going to try that next time.
Might not help me.
Next.
I hold the club fairly loosely, but just before starting back, I press my hands together on the grip once or twice. I call this a stationary press.
Yep, good.
Do you like that one, or is that pie in the sky nonsense?
No, that's good. It's fine. Well, it worked for him. He was the best player ever, so if it worked for him, it's...
Once again, I bow to better experts, but... Definitely Nicholas used to have a little tilt of his neck just before he played, which was kind of a starting motion. And I've heard Peter Thompson say as well, Clates, that you must have some trigger.
Motion, yeah. Did you see that Sam Horsfield on that video where he couldn't take the club back? Last week?
Yeah, I did.
Wow, how was that?
45 seconds.
Well, it didn't move. I mean, I've had the same thing. I know what it's like to not be able to move the club, but he was just like dead still for...
He's on warning for the Roger Bannister file.
Yeah, he is. I've got a huge amount of sympathy for somebody who can't take the club back. Yeah.
Zach, do you have a trigger to start your swing? Do you have anything that you do, or do you just swing it?
Well, I've been told that I tap my left foot before I shorter shots, but then for longer shots, I like press
little,
my thumb,
a little thumb press. But then, so there's something that
but you don't you don't think about it.
No,
and then
you never think about your toe. I've seen you tap your toe. I thought you were listening to some sort of old style swing music.
I'm a tap dancer from way back.
Torino tapped his toe.
He did a little two or three taps, didn't he? Tiger Woods didn't really, I don't think he had one. I remember reading Peter Thompson wrote an article about it once, said that's his problem. You know, when he was hitting it all over the place at one point, he said, well, that's because he doesn't have a trigger. He just stands there and then swings. He
goes, All right, four more because I've got 1,000 of these and we can't do it. One of my, this is Jack Nicklaus, everyone, if you've just tuned in. One of my lifelong checkpoints is to keep the shaft between my arms throughout the swing. I think that's my favourite one of these.
Yeah.
I think it's telling me that you've got to move your body, not just keep your chest static pointing at the ball. You've got to actually move your whole body and keep the whole thing in motion.
I guess that was
you're
just
doing that very briskly there,
Mark. It got you excited.
So it? Would you say that Jim Furyk didn't have the club between his arms on?
I'd say maybe 3% of his swing he had the club between his arms.
Yeah. Either way. Anyway, next.
Did you like that one, or is that just nonsense?
Well, that's something that worked for him. That's probably pretty sensible. It's hard to argue.
Yeah, that's true.
You can play.
When I putt, Clates, I hold my breath just before initiating the stroke to keep my head and body still.
Now, everyone's going to be trying that one.
Hold
your breath.
I've never heard of that before initiating the stroke to keep my head and body still.
Yeah, well, I played with a guy in the Asian Amateur who... I only really noticed it sort of late in the round but he did it on every shot. He like took a deep breath, like a sort of a small deepish breath, and then hit the shot. And then I was mesmerized by it. And by the end of the day, I was like doing it with him. Like as he took it away, I'd take a bit of a breath and then I'd get into it with him. So
Tai Chi.
Yeah, maybe it's just a bit of a loading mechanism. Yeah. You know, maybe like a bit of a tap of the foot or pressing their hands on the clubs or something like that. So, but it worked. He's nine in the world or something like that. So.
There you go. Yeah. All right. Practice hitting as fully as you can without letting either heel lift at any point in the swing. This will teach you the proper way to shift weight by rolling your ankles, but most of all, it will teach you the feeling of staying centered. I could see that in Jack's swing, if you see that.
Yeah, well, he was taught by Jack Grad, who was taught, I think, by Alex Morrison, who wrote about that. But if you looked at Justin Thomas now, he's not doing that.
No, he's definitely not doing that.
Not doing that.
And Mo Norman kept his back heel down.
Mo Norman kept, So,
two more, Clates.
Yep.
I never hit a shot, even in practice, without having a very sharp, in-focus picture of it in my head. It's like a colour movie.
There's a great story about Jack at the Open at Birkdale, 1976. Didn't play well the first day. And Peter Costas was a young teacher at 40 years ago. So he was, and he said, Peter, can you have a look at my swing? And he said, sure, Jack. So he hit a couple of shots and Peter said something to him. And Jack walked off to the side for about a minute and thought about it. Came back and hit two shots and said, that's it, thanks, and walked off and finished second. Mm. So every other single player in the world would have hit 50 or 100 balls just to make sure that was it. And he just, one suggestion, and he hit two balls. He gave him full attention, like he was on the last hole of the tournament.
Yeah.
He hit two shots and said, thank you, Peter, that's it, and walked off.
So he processed what Costas had said.
Yep, and he hit two shots, like gave them full attention, hit two shots perfectly, said, thank you, Peter, that's it, and finished second.
Is that why Costas always got the good interviews?
Maybe, I don't know.
It's pretty impressive.
It was Johnny Miller's Open. Seve, that was Seve's Open. Seve tied for Nicklaus for second.
This is one I'm only reading out because it was basically along the lines of what Peter Lonnard said earlier. Patience was always my strength. When a player sees a course doesn't suit him, he's half beaten already.
Mm. Yes, well, that was the Moona Links thing. And yeah. Zach, I think you were talking about the Queensland Open last week where when you started to struggle on the, was it the third day or the last day, where you started to chase things, where you can kind of get ahead of yourself almost just to try too hard, I suppose.
Yeah, it's like I wasn't meaning to get frustrated, but just with fatigue and like it was pretty hot up there, like just, you know, a few little things that you've actually got to say to yourself, you've got to be aware and go, all right, well, I've had a big couple of days here. Let's just slow everything down a little bit. And you've just got to be aware of your surrounds and try and be positive. Otherwise, you know, you're right, you're already half beaten, probably more than half beaten if you're worrying about how bad the greens are, or how bad the bunkers.
That Moona Links Open in 2003. This was going to be the home of Australian golf, wasn't it? I was at that tournament. You would have been as well, Clates. And there was an absolute chorus of criticism of the course, in particular the setup. I can remember the 17th hole, par three. They were struggling to stop the ball on the very shallow green over a ravine.
Craig Parry went nuts about that, didn't he?
Yes, he did, and a number of players did. But Lonnard was the one who kind of didn't say a word, and he won the tournament.
Proof's in the pudding.
But Jack was, you can talk all the time, he was the best player because he hit the most fairways and the most number of greens. I mean, the statistics weren't as reliable as they are now, but pretty much his whole career he was number one in greens and regulation. I mean, he was the best player because he was the best player.
What about this one then, Clay? It's my last words from the wisdom of Jack. This is for you, Muzz. I know I have to make the putt. There is no alternative. It has to go in.
Eric Pearce with the late news there, I'd say, Hazy.
Yeah. Probably. But it tells you everything you need to know about Jack. What a competitor he was.
Yeah, he was great.
Unbelievable.
Amazing player. But he was long, and he was a great iron player and a great putter and a great thinker. And
No weakness, really?
Well, people would say he wasn't a great chipper. I mean, Tiger had a better short game, probably. Tiger hit more great short game shots than Jack did. Jack was a much better driver. I mean, Tiger had the driver for ages, but I mean, Nicklaus just rifled that driver. When it was hard to drive, it was properly skillful to hit a wooden driver and a ballada ball. He was a great driver.
And we're heading back to, I was going to say, I'm fascinated by the Australian for some reason, but we're not going there. We're going to the lakes next week.
It's come around quickly, hasn't it?
It has just, really, just very quickly for the Australian Open. And we're really excited to get back to the lakes. And we've announced something about the field most weeks, the last few podcasts that we've done. This week, I'm very pleased to announce, Blakey, that at the moment, as we sit here, there are seven. It might change with Muzza if he does decide to turn pro. We'll be one of these off, and maybe Minwoo Lee as well. But right now, there are seven amateurs in the world's top 20 going to peg it up at the lakes next week. So the big one to watch outside our own Australian guys is Victor Hovland, who's from Norway and was the US amateur champion. He's arguably the hottest player in the world of amateur golf right now. And Takumi Kanaya, who you saw firsthand in Singapore win the Asia-Pacific Amateur. But seven guys in the top 20 in the world of amateur golf going to peg it up at the Australian Open. That's a phenomenal number.
Yeah, that's outstanding. What outside of Zach, which top Australian amateurs are playing? So Minwoo Lee, will he be coming back?
It depends whether he's amateur or professional, but he'll come back and play. So he's number 7 in the world. Zach's number 19 with a bullet. And Dave Micheluzzi's number 14. We're also going to have Connor Fuchs. We mentioned earlier he's going to play as the Australian Junior Champion, and there might be one other. It was just one more decision to be made, but it's going to be a strong Australian field against two Japanese guys, Kanaya and the Australian Amateur Champion Nakajima,
an American whose name is Zach Bashaw, and I'm missing Daniel Hillier, a former Australian junior champion who's a really good player from New Zealand. So,
and of course, the lakes having been redesigned by Michael Clayton's firm. How do you feel when the Open goes to one of your courses? You've obviously been through this at the lakes before, but do you have any sort of sense of trepidation, or is it good?
Greg had a slap at it, hated it. Adam doesn't like it.
So. The 14 green was controversial at one point.
I do know why, but I think it's a stupid reason. I think the arguments are stupid, but it's always interesting to watch people play golf course design, see how they handle it. It's definitely not a long hitter's golf course. It's just it never has been. Just the way it sets up, those short holes around the front nine and the par. I mean, the 17th's a par five where everyone, because where the water is, everyone plays the same second shot. So it's a course that, I mean, Peter Senior won.
Yep.
I don't think he could win again at 59, but it wouldn't surprise me if Senior and Lonard played well, because if there's one open course they could play well on, it's the lakes, because it suits, doesn't give a huge advantage to a long hitter.
It's interesting because I remember that, when Peter Senior did win that, I think 56 years of age in 2012, he said afterwards that when he started that week, he felt that the lakes was, it was a course that he could.
The only holes really where the long hitters have an advantage over a short, as Peter Senior type hitter, who's not long but not short, are the second and the third, really. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. No one's getting on 11, really. I suppose a few guys
don't
have.
Some get on 11.
12, maybe. 14, no, because they can all reach 14. They can all reach 17. So it's really only the second. There's only a couple of holes. So it's not a bashers course by any means.
Sets up well for someone who's got good control of a long 2-iron, Muzz, I'd suggest. And this, unbelievably, what are you, 22?
21.
21. 21 years of age. This will be your fifth Australian Open.
Yep.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah, I won the Aaron Baddeley when I was 16 or 17, and then I got an invite the year after that, and then I pre-queued the last 2 years, and obviously winning WA got me in this year. So, yeah.
What about your mates out at Carnarvon Golf Club? They'll be devastated that you don't have to go out there and pre-queue.
They'll be lost without me.
You should go out there and watch.
I should. I'm driving up on Sundays. I might trek out there on the Monday just to relive a couple of moments.
Hank Haney's theory.
Yeah.
He said didn't apply to Tiger Woods because he was so much better than everyone else, but he worked with Marco Mira. The only tournaments Marco Mira ever won, and he won a bunch, no three putts, no double chips. So if you miss the green, you chip your next ball on the green, and no penalty shots. And you couldn't find a course more applicable to those things. And I'm not equating the lakes in Augusta, but if you can go around Augusta with no three putts, no penalty shots, no double chips, the same with the lakes where there's lots of long, difficult long putts, lots of penalty shots, lots of water, and tricky chipping around the greens, difficult bunker shots. If you could go around there, no three putts, no double chips, no penalty shots, you win the tournament.
Hazy, how do you feel about a par three to finish championship course? Interested to know what Clates thinks as well.
Yeah, I've got no problem with it. I think it's a much better setup than having a par five that's determined what you have to do on as a final hole predetermined. I don't know, Clates.
If the 18th was the 17th and the 17th was the 18th, everyone would think, well, it's great, but it is what it is. I mean, it was a result of the freeway going through the golf course. And them having to put the clubhouse where they had to put it. And you had to build the 11th hole around the water. And the first hole had to go around the water. So you only had that little neck of land around the clubhouse to finish off. So there was no other way to. I'm sure Devlin and Von Hagee tried all they could to route it some other way. But the freeway and the clubhouse dictated that 9 and 18 had to be par 3. So it didn't bother me. I mean, you could argue that, you can like the Bible, you can find an argument for anything in golf course design. But in this day and age, it's one way to guarantee that the last hole is not a drive and a wedge.
Yeah.
And pretty much every other finishing hole in Australia is a drive and a wedge now for guys who can smash it.
Even par fives.
Even par fives. So, you can stick a 4-iron in someone's hand, especially if it's under the wind. Well, it's probably not a 4-iron now. It used to be.
But it could be. I mean, we saw in 2012 how windy it can get there. So
I remember Elkington and McQuinney who were hitting 1 and 2 irons in there, and 92.
I think the forecast for next week's meant to be pretty windy. Yeah. I thought Thursday is meant to be 32 kilometres, 33 kilometres an hour. So,
There you go.
Which will make it even more important that don't three-putt, don't double chip, and don't take any penalty shots.
True enough. Well, if you have had your appetite whetted by Clayton's description of his masterpiece there in southern Sydney, pop onto ozopengolf.com and look for the ticketing prices. They're very manageable prices to get out there. I encourage you wholeheartedly to get out and check it out. If you've never been to an Australian Open before, get out to the lakes. A great viewing course, plenty of great vantage points, especially in the mid side of the front nine.
You want to hang around the 14th green. You can watch 14, 15, and 16.
True.
It's a great spot to watch. Yeah, there are lots of great spots to watch golf at the lakes.
Yeah, it's a really great spectator course. So get along ozopengolf.com. I think it's /ticket or ticketing maybe. I'm sorry, I haven't got that in front of me, but you'll find it. Get out there and have a look. And also just another reminder that we are going to do Inside the Ropes podcast. At least one is a preview on Monday or Tuesday next week, and then one every day of the tournament. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you'll be your podcast.
Clates has to have his podcast fix, you know, because he can't go a day without one.
Well, Clates, just before we do depart here today, you're doing another podcast of all those. So there's five or six that potentially on your cards next week with us. And it's not enough for you, is it? You've got another one you've got to go and do for IC Golf at Bonnie Doon.
We're playing, so they get to, make some money out of all this podcasting. No, we're doing an architecture one, so you turn up, I play three holes with the people, and then with the ones who are turning up, play it in holes, and then we do a podcast live from the clubhouse. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes. Because the thing with podcasts is, everyone's trying to figure out how to monetize it. You know, it's not that I do it for the money, but my wife's always saying, all this stuff you do, you should get some money for it. And the killer podcast guys are the Pod Save America guys in America. You know, that's become a massive business in America. For those who don't interested in American politics, Pod Save America's all the stuff those guys do is amazing. So that'll be interesting tomorrow when the election results come in.
Yeah, it will be. You'll be on there soon, I'm certain.
Most the Australian Golf Media Championships are on Sunday, in which Hazy's making his comeback from a shoulder issues, so it'll be interesting to see how his chipping goes there. Unfortunately, I'm playing with him, so I'm going to get right inside his head. And you've seen his chipping expertise, of course.
Well, yeah, I've seen the best and a lot of the worst as well. The worst nearly, I know he lost an ankle,
We're actually going out to Concord, Hazy, to play there where they're opening up their changes to the course. So that's going to be interesting as well.
It will be interesting.
Take a couple of Jack's tips and there you go, Hazy.
Yeah, I'll loosen up my grip and swing slowly. And
no, just try the breathing one with your putter. And otherwise, just keep playing, Hazy.
Just keep playing. What is it, Clates? You don't know pressure until you have to stand on the 15th.
Bogey the last three holes. Bob Shearer's great line. No one knows pressure until you've got to bogey the last three holes to win the Golf Writers Championship.
And on that magnificent note, we bid you a farewell. Good luck, Muzz, whether you're an amateur or a professional. Maybe your fifth Australian Open's a charm.
Yeah, hopefully I can play well and make it three podcasts in a row. That's the goal for next week.
There you go. If you lead every night, you could probably get another three in during the week, so you could get up to five real quick.
Yeah. I'll just start calling me Mike Clayton II.
Podcast king, Zach Murray.
Thanks, Muzz. Good luck. Clayton, always appreciate your input, mate. It's very well received.
Thank you for having me.
And Blakey, thanks for doing everything you do with it. I appreciate it. Thank you. That's episode number 68. I'm not so sure when we're going to hear Andy Marr's magnificent voice back on. Might be after the Australian Open, so you might have to put up with me for another few more yet. Thank you all for listening, and we'll catch up with you next time on Inside the Ropes.